With us now is Father Stephen Alcott. He's a Dominican priest and director of the Little Margaret Shrine and Guild up in Columbus, Ohio. Father Stephen, thank you for being with us today.
You're very welcome, Father Rob. Good to hear your voice again.
Yes, it's been a few years. You've been traveling around to different places, so, huh?
Yes.
Dominicans, you never have any moss growing on your back. You're always moving.
True enough.
Well, you know, it was quite a surprise when last week Pope Francis named St. Margaret of Castello a saint of the church. And I honestly didn't know that there was a shrine up at your parish. Now, is your parish up there St. Joe's?
Our parish is called St. Patrick. It's downtown Columbus.
Okay, yeah. I get those two mixed up there. So there's another parish, St. Joe's, but you're St. Patrick's up there. And here you have the shrine to St. Margaret. Well, could you tell us a little bit about this new saint?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Yeah. St. Margaret was a saint. She's been waiting for a long time for this. She passed away into eternity, into the beatific vision of God on April 13th. So that was just over 701 years ago. She was beatified in 1609, but she is a great patron, especially for people who are unwanted. She's a great patron for the unborn. She's a great patron for people with handicaps. She's even a great patron for people, you know, involved in healthcare ministry, prison ministry, and even for people that don't have their prayers answered the way they want to. She was born with several congenital defects, including a severely curved spine. She was very short. She was blind from birth, and one leg was slightly shorter than the other. Her parents are very embarrassed about her. She was born to very well-to-do parents who lived in a castle in a city called Matola in Italy, and they kept her hidden. In fact, at one point, they basically walled her up in a cell right next to the chapel that they owned on their property. Now, Margaret loved being near the chapel. She loved God. They made a little opening in the chapel wall that went right to her cell so she could hear everything that was being said at the Mass, so she could receive Holy Communion. We just had the gospel about, you know, a branch connected to the vine, and she was quite literally connected to Christ right next to that chapel, to the presence of the Blessed Sacrament. She was a great student, and so the chaplain would find a great ear in her to listen to the teachings of the faith. But when she was a teenager, her parents heard that there was a nearby church in a neighboring town called Castello that sometimes people prayed at this church and received miraculous healing. So they brought their daughter there and directed her to pray for two whole days in a row that she would be healed. So she prayed for two whole days. But at the end of those 2 days, her spine was still severely curved. She was still very short. One leg was still longer than the other, and she was still blind. And so then her parents did a very sad thing. They just abandoned her. They said, in effect, to God, well, God, if you're not going to heal her, then she's yours to take care of now. And so they left without even saying goodbye. And most people here experiencing that would be very bitter. You know, they'd be very protective, they'd be very fearful, they'd be very anxious. But Margaret was exactly the opposite. The motto of the Dominicans is to contemplate God in prayer and study, and then to hand on the fruits of your contemplation. So she was at first kind of taken in just by the very beggars of the city, and then eventually joined a group of lay Dominican women who gave themselves to helping the poor and even visiting the prisoners. And she was always very cheerful. She would not be angry at her parents. She refused to allow people to speak badly about her parents in her presence. She forgave them. She brought comfort and consolation to the poor and even to prisoners. She knew what it was like to be walled up in the cell, you know, and yet she had great cheerfulness. And so even during her lifetime, she was highly revered by the people. Many healings were attributed to her, even though she was never healed herself. She never could understand why people pitied her. And on the day that she, on her funeral day, after she had died at 33 years of age, after a life of heroic charity and love, this is a great story that, Father Rob, you knowing Dominicans, you would probably appreciate this especially. The Dominicans were taking her and her funeral procession on just kind of a stretcher, and were about to turn toward the cemetery, but the people in the procession said, no, no, she's a saint. Bury her in the church. Bury her in the church. And the Dominican said, no, well, wait a minute. You know, we have to look, you know, to the judgment of the authorities and the church. We can't, you know, we can't just take this into our own hands. It has to go through the right process. And the people says, no, 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 she's a saint. So a good old Italian row was developing right there in the funeral procession.
Santa subito, santa subito.
Exactly. The Dominican, so they had to set poor Margaret's body down, you know, so that they could have a good old argument, a good old theological dispute right in the funeral, you know, procession. But meanwhile, this couple brings a little girl who was unable to walk and mute. And I guess they didn't realize that Margaret had already died, so they brought her there, and that quieted everyone down. They said they forgot their argument, you know. And the parents came and placed the little girl right next to Margaret. And tradition has it that Margaret, even though she had died, moved her hand over, touched the little girl, and the girl could walk and speak again. And so after that, the Dominicans brought her to the church.
Well, that was the evidence. You know, you guys wanted evidence. You got it.
So she is a wonderful, I think, a wonderful patron for the unborn. In fact, in this country, she was very little known until in the mid-70s, it was suggested that she'd be a great patron for the unborn. That was just after the Roe v. Wade court decision, and it was suggested actually by some of our cloister Dominican nuns in New Jersey that she would be a great patroness for the unwanted, because sadly, children diagnosed in the womb with some of Margaret's congenital defects, you know, the doctors might pressure them, you know, to terminate that pregnancy. So that kind of really gave her kind of a renewed devotion in this country.
How did the shrine come up and at St. Patrick's?
The shrine goes back a long ways, at least possibly back as far back as the 30s. But certainly it was kind of renewed in the 60s and 70s. And we have a relic of her heart. It's about a one inch round piece of her heart tissue, which we have novena prayers and the veneration of a relic after Mass is on Wednesday every week. And the Dominicans, we have a prayer. We pray the novena prayer just about every day, and as part of the Liturgy of the Hours.
It is a tremendous gift and a tremendous saint. And as you said, over 700 years. And it happened not through the normal process, but what they call an equipollent canonization. Could you explain that to us?
Certainly. Yeah, it was a little bit new for me, too. But this is the kind of canonization that can be done if a saint has, first of all, a long and well-attested tradition of heroic virtue and charity. If the saint has a long history of devotion and the saint has a long association with miracles, and Margaret certainly does. So for example, Pope Benedict XVI canonized St. Hildegard of Bingen by the same method. So if you have a saint who's been around a long time, a lot of miracles are associated with him, but perhaps, you know, there hasn't been a recent one that's documentable by the very strict criteria that are used by the Congregation for Saints. You know, that allows the Pope to basically extend that saint's devotion to the universal church through canonization simply by signing the decree. So that's what Pope Francis did on April 24th.
Well, I can understand the tradition of popular piety because, again, it's the church has recognized her as living a holy life, and there's been intercessions to her and her long life and the evidence of that. And as was clear, you know, even her body was able to be, you know, recovered and see, you know, that this is a real person. And yes, this really happened. And yes, this person we can consider a saint and worthy of devotion. And so those are all very important things for us to keep in mind today, especially in a world in which, you know, she's a boy, I'll tell you, you know, with all the different things of being abandoned by her parents, having these other things happening, she's in a sense very much understood in the culture and world in which we're living today, with children being abandoned, with parents who have drug problems, and the abortion and the handicapped and wanting. I mean, it's she is in many ways a sign of hope for us that in the midst of all this. She never had anything written down, I guess, huh?
Right. So we don't have any writings from her. We do have, there was a very early medieval biography of her. And there's a great book, if anyone wants to read it, by Father William Bonniewell. It's just called, it's called Blessed Margaret of Castello. It's published originally in 1952. It's still in print. It's probably its fourth edition now. But it's a very carefully researched book, but it's written actually in the form of a narrative. So he's in sort of dialogue, and it's very readable. It gives you a beautiful image of her. You can find it online.
Well, I'm going to have to look into that. Father Stephen Alcott, thank you so much for sharing with us this wonderful story. Now, if people want to come up and visit the shrine at St. Patrick's, how can they do that?
Very easy. Just come to St. Patrick's Catholic Church in Columbus, Ohio. We're open every day. If you're coming at a different hour, it might not hurt to just call the office and just make sure that someone can be there to show you around. But we'd be glad to have you come and see her shrine. And we also have a number of, books and prayer cards and medals available, too, if someone would like to take one with them.
Oh, wonderful. Well, Father Stephen Alcott, thank you so much for sharing with us. It's been a pleasure talking with you again.
Thanks, Father Rob.